This is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, 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 here we are. Monday already, and the weekend is gone. That is, if you had a weekend. I didn't have a weekend, but I'll bet a lot of you did. And it's gone, I tell you. Gone. And you're back to work today or doing whatever it is you do Monday through Friday. Welcome to the Guy James Show. So glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We'll try and have a good show for you today. Of course, having a good show means having you participate. And we hope you will give us a call today and let us know your thoughts on all things political, Democratic, liberal. Even some of you right-wingers want to call. Why? We'll talk to you, as long as you're civil. Hey, welcome to the show. So good to have you along. I know lots of people in our area here anyway had their weekend kind of ruined. We had a lot of rain, lots and lots and lots of rain. So we hope we're about over that. We've got enough right now. And, well, it wasn't a – I'm trying to think if there was a big – it wasn't a big news weekend, really, is it? Most things being hashed over this weekend are just things that – that happened on Friday. Of course, Friday's always a big news day, it seems like. And then again, well, we had that building go down in New York City. That was a really weird-looking thing. What do they think? It's a possible suicide attempt? I don't know. I didn't catch the whole thing. But oh, and of course, you know, we got the story about all the terrorists. Lots of terrorists out there running around all over the place. My, oh, my, oh, my. Terrorists everywhere you look. And we're going to be hearing that from now on. I'm going to talk about that in a little while here on the program today. And got invited back to Washington for another one of these conferences, you know, not as big as that last one. And I don't know. I don't think I'll go this time. It's not that I don't like going to Washington, but I don't know. Sometimes I wonder maybe some of these things are a little bit too much fluff, and not enough gets done. Just my opinion, anyway. But it is always nice to go back to Washington, D.C. You know, just a few weeks ago, my wife and I visited Washington, D.C., and as I've stated many times on this program, I do love that town. On a beautiful Sunday afternoon, we were looking at the beautiful sight of the Capitol building from our vantage point about halfway down Pennsylvania Avenue going toward the White House. And We walked past the White House and admired that for a while. Of course, all the protesters out there, always, if you've never been to Washington, always lots of protesters out in front of the White House. You never know what they're protesting, but of course, in this case, a lot of anti-war people there. And we walked past the White House on down the street to the Monroe House and where else? Over toward George Washington University Law School. It's a nice little area of town right there. And then on to the mall where we sat resting on a park bench looking toward the Washington Monument with the Lincoln Monument at our backs. And it was thrilling to us, as it always is when we visit there. Been all over Washington and some of the favorite places there, you know, DuPont Circle, the National Cathedral, the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. Of course, you know, of course, the usual things, the Capitol and the White House and the Mayflower Hotel and the Mint and Arlington and the Vietnam Wall and what, Jefferson Memorial. Of course, one of my favorites is the Marine Monument there with Mount Suribachi. I do love that. It's a beautiful sight, especially in the evening. It's really something every citizen of the United States of America should have the opportunity to do. I truly believe that if everyone had a chance to visit and soak up the history of Washington, D.C., things might just be different in our country right now. I really do. If you tour the city, and as I have many times, become immersed in its history and the significance that it has, not only within the borders here of our country, but on the world stage as well, of course, you'll realize that it's a town to be cherished and nurtured and protected at all costs. At all costs. And it's a treasure of treasures in our nation, and it's worthy of the respect and awe it inspires to almost everybody who goes there. And I've been there lots of times, like we've mentioned, summer, winter, on business, as a tourist, as a working broadcaster. Even had the honor of visiting my cousin's office in the Treasury Building overlooking the White House grounds. Her name's Mary Ellen Withrow, and she was the Treasurer of the United States during the Clinton administration. We got, the royal tour of the Treasury, and it was a proud moment for our family when one of our own earned the great honor of being appointed U.S. Treasurer. So I do have a special feeling about Washington, D.C., but this time was different. It really was. First of all, it was a working trip, and there weren't a lot of moments to enjoy the atmosphere. It was just nose to the grindstone the whole time. But more importantly, I was thinking about this last night, and I had kind of a different feeling this time around. I thought the difference was maybe that I was working, I was a bit stressed out, tired, and all of that, but the more I thought about it, I realized that none of that contributed to the different feeling I was having about Washington this past trip. And it was something completely different. It was, I think, the first time I've ever experienced the ugliness this town has taken on. And make no mistake about it, I mean, Washington has its bad parts, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ugliness of the corruption and the abuse of power and looking down K Street and realizing that most of the important decisions being made in our capital city are being made in the offices of that city street instead of on the Capitol building. Decisions being made by men who have the money to buy power and influence, men who, because of their wealth, have been able to buy the favors of United States senators and members of the House of Representatives. Men who, because of their wealth and influence, have been able to buy the elected offices of many of our legislators. And so, they end up having the undivided attention on any issue the lobbyist wants to advance. And it's become a city that's now serving a handful of private and corporate masters instead of the people. The people who've been cast aside in the interest of corporate power and greed. Now, before you say so, I'm not some naive country bumpkin who thinks the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington was ever representative of how Washington functions. And I'm not, I'm also not naive enough to believe that there are not a whole lot more Duke Cunninghams and Jim Traficants and Jack Abramoffs and Tom DeLays lurking in almost every building in Washington. people wanting to fill their pockets with money. I'm a realist, and Washington has, most likely from its very beginning, never been totally clean. But by and large, the town's functioned pretty well up until just a few short years ago. Had its share of scandals, but it's getting out of hand right now, I think. I think Washington no longer represents the heart and soul of a great nation. It now represents something a whole lot different, something I'd hoped it never would represent. It's kind of a, well, I look at it as a profit center for a handful of rich, powerful people who really will stop at nothing to achieve their goals of vast riches and power and dominion over the rest of us. It's a town that really no longer cares about making decisions which benefit the citizens of the whole country. It's a town that seems to me, and you tell me if you disagree with me, it seems to me that it's a town that really no longer cares whether or not poor kids have a decent breakfast in the morning so that they can concentrate on their studies instead of an empty stomach. It's a town that no longer cares that the elderly and the infirmed who have nowhere else to turn get the proper medication that'll help extend their lives in a dignified manner. It no longer cares whether or not thousands of our young men and women's lives are sacrificed needlessly on a battlefield thousands and thousands of miles away. Lives, it seems to me, that are being sacrificed on the altar of almighty greed. The Halliburtons, the Bechtels, the KBRs, and the other friends of the Bush administration, literally stealing billions of dollars from our national treasury. Money that right now is sorely needed here at home. Actually, when you stop and look at the whole thing, it's money we don't even have because they're mortgaging our kids' and grandkids' futures in the name of corporate greed. And that's why I feel starting to feel bad about Washington. Greed's become the god of Washington, D.C., and to a certain extent it always has been, but it's getting so much worse right now. It's everywhere you look. We've got a Congress here last week, willing to allow a minimum wage to remain at $5.15 an hour while their own pay goes up almost as much as those minimum wage earners make in an entire year. It's pathetic. Our kids are failing to keep up with the rest of the world in our public education system, and what are our elected officials doing about it? Are they fixing the public schools? Oh, no. They're abandoning the public schools in favor of private schools. And what else? Schools for profit. I firmly believe that abandoning public schools in favor of schools for profit is going to be a catastrophe for our country. It will. Mark my word on that. Washington, D.C., has become a town that it very conveniently forgets about the primitive conditions people on our own Gulf Coast are living under right now, swept under the rug. How much do you hear about that down there now in the New Orleans and Mississippi? The profiteers and the friends and financial supporters of the Bush administration swooped down on Mississippi and Louisiana, and they ran away with truckloads of government money, while many, many, many of the citizens of that area are still living in tents. We got thousands of empty house trailers purchased from friends of politicians at the cost of $77,000 each, sitting in huge lots unused because of bureaucratic blunders and massive incompetence. Trailers that ought to cost around $25,000. Insurance companies. It's a scandal what insurance companies have done in that area. Under the protection of legislators, they've bought and paid for gouging the public for obscene premiums and then not wanting to pay. And, when I look at Washington nowadays, too, I looked at that beautiful Capitol building. I'm thinking inside of it we've got a bunch of legislators who know that we've got a health system that is so broken and expensive that so many hardworking Americans can't even afford to get the care they need to make their lives even bearable. There are tens of millions of Americans without any health insurance whatsoever. Last I heard, it was something like 46 million. People having to choose between life-sustaining medicine and their food. this in the richest nation on earth? Ah, it's disgusting. It really is. And you know, this is also in a nation, and until recently was known for its compassion, for helping the downtrodden and the disadvantaged, the nation that bragged about helping the tired, the poor, and the huddled masses. There's got to be a tear streaming down the face of that beautiful statue in New York Harbor right now. It's tears for a nation that's all but forgotten that wonderful phrase inscribed upon her. The word freedom is inscribed on so many buildings and monuments in Washington. Freedom. A word and an idea cherished by mankind all around the world. A word that this country was founded upon. A word that's given hope to people all around the world. A word that's being forgotten in Washington right now. We've got a government slowly but surely taking away our cherished and beloved freedom. And what are we doing about it? I mean, this is a freedom that hundreds and thousands of Americans have died for. Men and women buried in military cemeteries all around this globe. Died for these freedoms, and now they're taking them away from us. You know, I could give you a litany of dozens of crimes against the people and humanity in general committed by this immoral administration. Really, it's an administration that's defiled the good name of the United States. Administration hell-bent upon grabbing as much power and money as they can while they can, and without any thought of the legalities or morality whatsoever. They've shown disdain for the people of this country and for the judicial and legislative branches of government as well. They don't give a damn. Constitution. Constitution has been described by our president as only being a piece of paper. And stay the course. Stay the course. I do love that one. Stay the course. Don't think I've heard of anything any more ridiculous than the way Bush uses stay the course. It's offensive. It really is. I'm incensed every time I hear Bush say it. I really am. And he reminds me, I was thinking last night about this, he reminds me of a dog I had when I was about 12 years old. The dog's name was Buster. Buster was quite a dog. And he was half collie and half German shepherd, a big old dog. And he developed this habit of chasing groundhogs and raccoons. And every few weeks, old Buster'd chase a groundhog or a raccoon into a hollowed-out log in the woods or in a corner somewhere, and he'd go in after him. And he'd come home with his face half torn off every time. I must have seen Buster get ripped up by those nasty critters two or three dozen times over a period of years. And for a while, I thought Buster was really brave for staying the course, so to speak. But finally, I figured out that old Buster was just plain stupid. Junior Bush and Buster have something in common. So this past trip to Washington, D.C. wasn't any fun. It was all work and no play, but most of all, it brought home the sad realization to me that Washington might not any longer be that great shining city on the hill that it used to be. Not right now, anyway. But it did help me to realize that we need to redouble our efforts to clean the place out and save what's left of our democracy. And you and I can do it. We can do it. We have to do it. Doesn't look like anybody else is going to. 866-546-5254. Kind of quiet phones today. 866-546-5254. Why not give us a call? We hope you will.
Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kit, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. And we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice. the Holy Trinity show. Now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid, weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch, Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Ed Asner. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
New York's got snow in April, and I can't locate the sun. High yellow ribbon around something, something good has begun. Katie holds up the Bible. Miles to Baghdad. Soldiers, load up your guns and tie yellow ribbon around something. Something good has begun. The boy in the middle, he sits down to pray. Moves to the window, I can see him as he waves. Hey Mac, look out, Mac calls back, Billy, I'll be careful. I'm just trying to be brave. So tie a yellow ribbon around something. Something lives beyond. Mac calls back, Billy, I'll be careful. I'm sure they built them to stand so tall. 19 miles to Baghdad. They fall and were called a yellow ribbon around something.
Ah, yes, 19 miles in Baghdad. Say, certainly a lot going on in the area of Baghdad and around that whole area today. We plan on talking about that quite a bit today. God, will it ever end? I don't think so. It seems to me that it's just getting worse and worse and worse. All the reports that I've seen come out of here, out of there. And recently, just today, I read a report by the former head guy from Newsweek. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. He was in there, and he's saying, and he's home now, and he's saying it's a lot worse than it's being reported. Here we have, you know, we have all these people claiming that from the administration claiming, say, oh, you're just reporting, they're not reporting the good news. Laura Ingraham is always on that kick, not reporting the good news, just reporting the bad stuff. And there's a whole lot more good news than there is bad news. Oh hell, please, people, let's get real here. Let's get real. And you got Dick Cheney out on the stump today, up in Michigan, I believe it was, going up there for a GOP fundraiser. First of all, who the hell would invite Dick Cheney to a fundraiser right now? You'd have to realize that if you were at a fundraiser, a Republican fundraiser, and Dick Cheney was the speaker, hell, I wouldn't go near a building like that. That would have to be an army of idiots in a room like that. Dick Cheney? Who would invite him in? What candidate would invite him in to? I don't know the particulars on it. Maybe it was just to raise money for the party. That's probably it, because surely no candidate would have Dick Cheney come in and do a little black slap and backslap and have him on the podium with him, would they? I don't think so. God, that'd be political suicide. But, you know, he was talking about, how things are, we're going to see it through in Iraq and all that. Yes, it's just going to be wonderful. Just going to be wonderful. Gone so well so far. Hey, a friend of mine sent me this. You all saw the debate last week with Ned Lamont and Holy Joe Lieberman. And anyway, Lieberman's really resorting to some gutter politics now. He said he wouldn't, but of course he is. He's that kind of a guy. Let's face it, he's a guy without much of a conscience. I think we always knew that about Joe Lieberman. But he's got a new ad out, and a friend of mine sent me this. It's his correspondence with the Lieberman campaign. And he said, Joe's new ad claims Ned is just about a bumper sticker that says no more Joe, but has no substance. The problem is, the Lamont campaign never had this bumper sticker. They're liars. So my friend writes to the guy in Lieberman's campaign and says, "Dear Ken, you invited me to write back and ask questions of the campaign, so here I go. Why is the Lieberman campaign lying about a bumper sticker that the Lamont campaign never produced? Your new ad claims Ned Lamont has a bumper sticker saying no more Joe, when his campaign has never had this. So I guess the conclusion we can draw from this is Ned Lamont may have superficial bumper stickers, but Joe Lieberman supports sleazy Karl Rove-like tactics and lies to smear his opponent," unquote. "Once again, you should all be ashamed. Come on, Ken, leave the dark side. Be a true Jedi and a true Democrat and abandon Joe." And so what's my friend get back in the way of a response about these lies from the Lieberman campaign? "It's nice to see you're still active. Hope you enjoy your summer day." That's it. That's what they got back. Oh, well. Hey, let's go to the phones. Let's see if... Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy.
Yes.
Yeah, Guy, this is Laura from Michigan calling in.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to talk about what you were saying before about the change in the way the government seems to be run. and all the negativity. And I've been thinking a lot about that. And, you know, what has changed in the American people? And you kind of end up going back to 9/11. And what has made everyone so crazy? And it seems to me that we all went crazy because so many people had that false sense of security. And 9/11 happened. Buildings fell. People died. And everyone goes, wow, I'm not safe, you know? And they weren't safe anyway. And we're still not safe today. If somebody wants to do something, they will. There's no amount of going in into countries and killing so many people and routing out terrorists that's going to ever change that.
I think you're right. You it'd be like trying to kill all the cockroaches in the world. You won't be able to do it.
Yeah, and people just have to grow up and get a grip. That's what I.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite things. Get a grip.
Well, let me ask you: Did you feel unsafe and threatened after 9/11?
No.
I never did either.
No, but you know, I knew that the only kind of safety, well, let's say it's more about being empowered. You just have to have your own personal empowerment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
None of us are safe. We're all here, out here doing our thing, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
We all have a bit of the spiritual world with us, and the rest of it is we're all on our own. And when it's our time, that's we're going to be called. And the funny thing is, it seems to me like so many of these people that feel that way and kind of go in the mode of the religious are the religious right people. And they, of all folks, feel the most empowered because of their belief system.
Good point.
But these people seem to have the least feeling sense of security.
Yeah, yeah, they feel more threatened and they're acting that out more than
So I don't know what that's all about.
I don't understand it. I don't either. I never. I mean, I guess it's in my nature. It must be in your nature as well. I never felt personally threatened by any of that, and I still don't. I don't worry about it. I haven't spent 5 minutes worrying about it. Oh, yes, I've worried about my country, and I've worried about other people, I suppose. But
right.
It's just natural. You're thinking, well, it's not going to happen to me. You know, not where I live, anyway.
Right. And, you know, there were some things we could do. Like, they made the cockpit doors more secure.
Sure.
Things like that. You know, that just made sense. But to go around hurting other people in case, you know, they might be terrorists.
Well, and here they are taking advantage of that again now, beating the drum. How much of that are we going to hear from now till election time? Oh, there's terrorists around every corner. We're starting to hear it now.
Yeah.
Both of these recent arrests and so forth. Those guys were not. You know, there's street gangs in L.A. a whole lot more organized to do violence than these guys were.
Yeah, thank you. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to do a lot of cleaning up at home before we go searching outside.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, so Mr. Cheney's in your neck of the woods today.
Oh, no, is he?
Yeah. I don't know. He's in Michigan somewhere. I don't know where in Michigan. But he's there making a speech to some National Guard troops, and he's there at a fundraiser for the Republican Party. So congratulations, Darth Vader's in your state, roaming around free.
Luke, I'm your father.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for your call. Nice to hear from you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, let's see who we got on the other line here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
I'm Alice from Humboldt.
Hi, Alice.
Guy, you expressed the feelings of many of us better than anyone. I would not even want to visit the Washington, D.C. today. We have these people in office because they rig elections. First thing is that we need to get rid of their crooked machines.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I'm not in favor of the voting machines, that's for sure.
How do you feel about the election?
Well, You mean the upcoming midterms?
Yeah, November.
I got to be honest. I spent a good deal of time over the weekend, and probably friends of mine looking at me and going, is he nuts? Is that what he does in his spare time? But I sat down and analyzed a lot of the races and how they're coming and how the polls are looking and so forth. And I think we got a big mountain to climb. A lot of Democrats are taking it for granted that we're going to take the House and Senate back. And I'll tell you what, right now it looks to me like we're not going to be able to do either one. I mean, I hope so, and we're going to work for it, work towards that goal. But right now, it doesn't look good to me.
No, I know it.
And if we don't, God help us, you know?
I know. We've got to do it. We've got to do it.
I believe if the election were held right now, we'd have a hard time taking them both. So we've got a lot of work to do between now and November, and I hope a lot of Democrats. You know, the secret's going to be getting the Democrats out to vote, as it always is. People can't sit on their duffs and expect us to win, because they'll never convince me that.
On it all the time.
Oh well, yeah, I mean.
And so are we down here. So.
So
you have to keep on and not give up.
That's right. That's right. Alice, thank you for your call.
Okay.
Nice to hear from you.
Thanks, guy.
You know, I'm truly concerned about that right now. About a lot of Dems taking it for granted that we're just going to automatically walk in and take over the House and the Senate. They better look at the polls, and they better look at the real world and understand that we've got an awful lot of work to do. I mean, I know a couple of people wrote to me over the weekend, and I haven't had a chance to respond yet. You know, just pretty much taking it for granted that Lamont's going to boot Lieberman out. I don't take that for granted at all. Not at all. That guy's been around the block a time or two, and he's not going to give up easy, and he's going to resort to whatever tactics he has to stay in office. That's just how it is. And here we've got Barack Obama out. You know, and I resent this. I have not met Barack Obama, and I don't know if I'll get the chance to. But if I did, I'm afraid I'd have to look him in the eye and say I'm very ashamed of what you've been out beating the drum for this past week, saying how we've got to go court the religious right. No, I don't think we need to go and suck up to them. If they want to come over to the Democratic Party for the right reasons, and get away from the leadership that they've had and that they voted into office, they need to come over for the right reason, not because we have to go over and suck up to them and make promises to Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and James Dobson like the Republicans have done. I want no part of that. No part of that whatsoever. I'll tell you this right now. If I, any of my Democratic candidates, if I find them sucking up to the likes of Falwell, Robertson, Dobson, I don't want anything to do with them. Absolutely not. I just don't want any part of that. I'm not saying that Democrats shouldn't work toward attracting Christians and people of all faiths, for that matter. But what I'm saying is to stay the hell away from these charlatans like your Dobsons, Falwells, and Robertson. Stay away from them, and don't make promise them. Don't promise them the world like the Republicans did to get their votes. Absolutely not. Don't want any part of that. Well, I don't know. Let's go to the phone. Well, it's blinking kind of funny here. Wait till it settles on something. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Ohio. How you doing?
Hi, Bill. How are things in Toledo?
Oh, real good. How about things down south there?
Well, we've had a lot of rain.
A lot of rain, huh? Everything nice and green?
Oh, always everything's nice and green, yeah.
Hey, listen, Guy. I was just wondering how many of your listeners read the case against that green in Iraq. The guy who raped.
Oh, man.
Did you read the case?
Oh, yeah.
I just read that today. You know,
That's not a good read.
That just made me sick to my stomach. I never read anything. I can't remember last time I read something like that.
Well, I read a story over the weekend that starts to make some of this make sense anyway. I can't imagine this happening, but it said that a lot of these skinhead people are being, they're going into the military. our military.
Well, you know, I seen that guy, and I seen that a couple years ago someplace on TV, and, you know, it was just, I don't know whether it was a 60 Minutes story, or but it was an expose on some of these people that are going into the military that are just eating this up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they, you know, there's the guys that go out and play the little war games in the woods and all that stuff and wear their fatigues to school and end up in the military. I would think the military might want to give some of those guys some serious psychological evaluations before they let them in into our military service.
Well, I just can't get over this story that I read today.
No, and it's awful.
I suggest that some of your readers or your listeners, excuse me, read that story. And it just puts your hairs on end.
Well, and as it turns out, there's a whole lot more to it than what we'd first thought. You know,
how could that go on? You know that nobody. Of course, I don't watch the news, so. But I haven't seen it on. You know, like when you read a Google News, I had to do a search on that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and what I just did was an Iraqi search, and. It came up there, and then I read the story.
Well, some of the really horrible part about this, aside from that Iraqi family being butchered by these animals that did this to them.
Oh, my God, it's just horrible.
Well, it is horrible. But here's the other thing. You know, we had those two soldiers of ours kidnapped and their bodies mutilated, and, you know, they're killed and bodies mutilated. Now it turns out that there's pretty good evidence to see that the two incidents were related. That this
is that right? That, no, see, I didn't see.
Yeah,
that.
This is vengeance coming back from the families of those people that were, you know, that girl that was raped and murdered, and their families, and they have called in, you know, some of the insurgents and all to take care of these guys, and they're actually claiming that's exactly what happened. That's what happened to these two guys, and. I'm just looking here. I had some notes on it. One of the local taxi drivers in the area there that knows these people said they started to bother us by winking at our women, and we thought that something bad would happen. Now it has. The Mujahideen will get more revenge for us and this small girl. We await the capture of another 8 American soldiers. These people are after blood.
Boy, oh boy. You know, this is all coming to roost. This is all at the doorstep of this piece of human waste that we got in office right now. I listened to a thing on Media Matters that was, I believe, it was with Chomsky from, it was either February or March, and he was on the show Media Matters, a radio show for an hour. I wish you could maybe get him on sometime.
Noam Chomsky, yeah.
Yeah, he is fantastic.
He is.
And he talks a lot about the Iraq war and what's going on over there and that. And we're no better than the people that marched into Poland. And when people wake up and finally realize that and realize what a stain this is going to be on the American psyche, I just think in 10 or 15 years down the road, we're not going to look too good.
You're right.
We're not looking good now. I think everybody's so busy with trying to make ends meet that they're really they don't have any idea what is really going on.
I think you're right. There, people are caught up in it. But like I've said before, if the draft was back, and
I thought about that today. Excuse me for interrupting you. But that's the whole part of that's the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's why people aren't marching in the streets. You can bet they would be. And I'm not advocating that. But the youngsters aren't. You know, the youngsters don't give a damn about this going on. They really don't.
No,
I've talked to a good number of them myself, and you know, it's going on over there. It's a war. I mean, they really, and I don't mean that as an indictment to all the youth in this country, but they're not paying enough attention to this. And if they thought they were going to have a backpack on their back and head over there anytime soon, they'd care a whole lot more about it than they do right
now.
Look
at the protest. You know, think back in '68 and '69. Look what happened on the college campus
yep.
there in Ohio. And
up in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin was a big deal.
Yeah, oh, that was big. That was big there where they took over the office there of the, I forget what it was. They were...
It was the administration office at the University of Wisconsin.
Offices, that's right. Well, you're a sharp guy. You're sharp.
Well, I just remember that really well.
Scandal to you, buddy.
Well, I just remember all those things happening, and I'm sick to death over this whole thing, and you're right that it eventually ends up on the big desk in the Oval Office, and nobody's heads have rolled for this stuff, this horrible stuff that's happening. I mean,
look at the money we're throwing away. It's just unbelievable. This rat hole is just billions, and think of all the education. Think of what we could do for this country. And helping the young people go to college, housing. Take, for instance, what could we take and do down there in New Orleans with the money that we're throwing away?
Yeah, with $500 billion?
We could show our people that we really care about them. God, I'd hate to have that happen to me down there and look for some help and say, hey, we don't have it.
Oh, and hey, I found out, being a Floridian here, I found out a little story over the weekend, another little story I'm not too proud of. Maybe you heard about it. You know, when Carnival Cruise sent their ships down there, they made it sound like it was a terrible sacrifice on their part to send their ships down there to house people. As it turns out, they were hardly used for housing, but they sent them down there, and as it turns out, it seems that the Jebster here, Jeb Bush, is good friends with the folks over at Carnival.
I hardly believe this now.
I know. It's hard to believe, but they got a hold of Jeb real quick after this happened, like real quick, and they called Jeb Bush and said, hey, Jeb, how about helping this? I'm paraphrasing now. How about help?
There's a chance to make some money here.
Yeah. How about seeing if you can get us in there? 3 hours after they made the call to Jeb Bush, they came up with a $326 million contract to send the ships down there. Yeah.
Well, that's not jump change, is it?
No, and it's not exactly an act of charity either. We're sacrificing. No, I knew Jeb Bush was probably involved in it. Now we know for sure.
Hey, Guy, listen, I'll let you go. You think you're going to be on a cruise come this November the 7th? And have to sit there and eat crow.
Oh, don't remind me.
You don't want to go there.
I think I was sitting off the coast of the Cayman Islands. And
listen, Guy, you want to say about November the 7th, think of how I felt in 99 on my birthday and watch those election results.
Oh, you get to always remember that the rest of your life. You can celebrate
it. Yeah, I honestly, God, cried that day.
Yeah, I know.
I'll put it that way, that morning. Yeah. Listen, Guy, it was great talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
You got a great show, buddy.
Hey, do something about cleaning up at the Buckeye State up there a little bit, will you?
It's going to be tough, isn't it? But
it's getting ugly, but Strickland's going to win that, isn't he?
I think he is. I think this Blackwell was going to have to take and maybe get a job. I don't know.
Oh, some fat cat Republican.
That's all. Only hope. But, boy, the American people better wake up.
Thanks for your call.
They just better wake up. Bye, Guy.
Bye now. Yeah, the Jebster seems like he helped the folks over there at Carnival Cruise Lines out. You remember that whole story? They took those ships down there. I think, two of them or so? I don't remember. But, we're going to have to displace 120,000 passengers and all. And it's really going to be rough on us, but we want to help out. Yeah. They want to help out to the tune of $326 million. Ah, yes. There's always a dollar amount in there somewhere, isn't it? Always a dollar. Where were we going with this? Had the phone lines lit up, and all of a sudden they went away there. I don't know why. I suppose you all heard about that thing, and I'm not going to spend any time on this because it got ruined, but I suppose you all heard this, right?
Lisa Lampanelli in studio. Great to see you.
You too, babe.
Ann Coulter, who was supposed to be on the show about an hour and a half ago, is now on the phone as well. Ann?
Hello.
Hi, Ann. You're late, baby doll.
Somebody gave me the wrong number.
How did you get the right number? Just dialed randomly, eventually you got through to our show?
My publicist emailed it to me, I guess, after checking with you.
Ah.
But I am really tight on time right now because I already had it.
All right, well, get lost.
Oh, my God.
Well, now, I like the get lost part, but I've heard that Adam has since apologized to poor Ann Man Coulter. What a pity. He apologized to her. Now, I've had that happen on this program. Someone's going to call and didn't make it on time for one reason or another, or had a wrong number. That happens. That happens in this business. It happens, not all the time, but it does happen now and then. So it's not a big deal. But the big deal in that one was for her kind of telling him, hey, I'm really pressed for time here. Let's get this over with, is pretty much what she was saying. And he read between the lines and got the message. But now I've heard that he apologized to the beautiful and wonderful and alluring. Oh, excuse me. Ann Coulter. Man. Quite a nice lady, that Ann Coulter, that's for sure. I was looking at the chat room there, and somebody mentioned, and I guess I know who it is, but somebody mentioned that the polls are down around 30% right now for Republicans, something like that. No, they're not. Don't bank on that 30% stuff. Just don't ask. Don't bank on that. It's not going to happen. The Republicans are going to put up a big fight, and we're going to have the fight of our lives on this coming fall. It's absolutely going to be the fight for our political lives. And let me tell you this. If the Democrats don't win this year, if the Democrats can't take at least one of the houses back, man, I'll tell you, it might be folding tent time. If you can't beat these people right now with all that they've done, if we're in that sad a condition that we can't take them on and beat them this time, I really, really worry about the party. I do. And we've got some great candidates out there. We talked about some of them last week, and I've been following Jim Webb's campaign in the Senate in Virginia, and I like what I see. I definitely like what I see. Now, he's far more moderate than I am, but let's face it, he's a hell of a lot farther left than that idiot he's running against. How did he ever get to be a senator? How did he ever, Alan, ever get to be a senator? Have you ever noticed just what a simpleton the guy is? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me that thinks that, but he just reminds me of in a lot of ways, he reminds me of George Bush. But Webb, and like I said, I'm sure he and I find plenty of things to disagree about politically. But I have been following his campaign for the Senate, and I do like what I see. Webb feels the Republican Party has drifted in a different direction from where he was in it, and he now declares that he's a Democrat. Well, good. I see there's several noted people around the country saying the same thing. And from what I can read and see of Jim Webb, I'll welcome him into the party with open arms. You know why? Because this guy's got some fight in him. He's got some real fight in him, something that's all too rare in our party nowadays. I think Harry Truman would like Jim Webb, and I'm sure Jim Webb probably admires Harry Truman-style politics as well. You're not going to run over Webb in a fight. Uh-uh. He's tough. He's very tough, and he's well-spoken, and he's more than willing to mix it up with George Allen on any issue that Allen's got enough guts to challenge him on. And I think you'll find that eventually Allen will probably avoid Webb as much as he possibly can, because it's obvious he doesn't have the speaking ability, the charisma, the guts, anything. He doesn't have anything it takes to stand up to a guy like Jim Webb. Sir Webb was a Republican. He served as well as Navy Secretary under Reagan. It was a pretty short term. I think it was 8 or 10 months. Wasn't long. But that doesn't mean he can't see the light and understand that today's Democratic Party serves the people of this country a whole lot better than his former party. People do change. Not Ed Schultz, but people do change. I hope and pray the rest of the Democratic candidates will adopt the campaign strategies of guys like Jim Webb and Sherrod Brown up in Ohio and Chester out in Montana and Ned Lamont up in Connecticut. You know, none of these guys are going to take a back seat to anyone, and none of them are going to wilt under heavy fire. And every single one of those guys will return fire. they'll return more than they received, and that's what I like about them. They've got guts. You take a good hard look at all four of these guys, and I think you'll find the stuff real Democrats should be made of. They got fire in their bellies. They've got beliefs, and they're willing to stand up and fight for them, and I think they all make fine examples for the rest of our Democratic candidates to follow. I think all of them are winners. There's one thing for sure. You can bet your boots on this. They'll all give it everything they've got, and they won't be conceding. You can bet on that. I had some. I had a note around here. So let me remind you what Webb wrote back in 2004. This Jim Webb. Bush arguably has committed the greatest. You know, this is for those of you that think, well, he just changed over this year. No, it's not true. He's talking about Bush here now. And quoting Jim Webb, he said, Bush arguably has committed the greatest strategic blunder in modern history. To put it bluntly, he attacked the wrong target. While he boasts of removing Saddam Hussein from power, he did far more than that. He decapitated the government of a country that was not directly threatening the United States and, in so doing, bogged down a huge percentage of our military in a region that has never known peace. Our military is being forced to trade away its maneuverability in the wider war against terrorism while being placed on the defensive in a single country that never will fully accept its presence. There is no historical precedent for taking such actions when our country was not being directly threatened. The reckless course that Bush and his advisors have set will affect the economic and military energy of our nation for decades. It is only the tactical competence of our military that, to this point, has protected him from the harsh judgment that he deserves. Jim Webb. Huh? That sound like a Democrat to you? Sounds like a Democrat that's ready to charge into battle, doesn't it? He's not afraid to say what he means, and I think he means what he says as well. How many of you read over at Digby's website? I love that site. I try and read it every day. I think these guys. I don't do a lot of research into finding out who runs these websites. I really don't. I just know if I like their style or not, and I do like Digby'sBlogspot.com. He's someone well read and always got something great to say. But we need a Joe Lieberman like we need a case of the, well, we don't need Joe Lieberman. Let's just leave it at that. We don't need Joe Lieberman at all. And I hope and pray that Ned Lamont keeps gaining ground. It seems like that campaign of his just keeps gaining steam, and I hope and pray he keeps it up. And you know what? I think he will. I think he will. Well, hey, it's just about time, I think, to head over to the news. So we'll get ready for that. Yeah, news coming up in about a half a minute. So stay tuned. We've got a lot to talk about in the second hour of the program today. I hope you join us, 866-546-5254. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
This is the Quality News Network. The man Russia referred to as its Osama bin Laden has been killed by Russian special forces. He's Chechen warlord Shamil Abasayev, who claimed responsibility for the worst terrorist attacks in Russia in recent years and was also reportedly planning an attack to coincide with this weekend's G8 summit in St. Petersburg. A UN Security Council vote on Japan's draft resolution calling for sanctions against North Korea for last week's missile launches has been delayed until later this week. China, which says it still stands by Pyongyang, had asked for the delay. Meanwhile, Japan says it's considering whether its constitution will allow a preemptive strike against North Korea. More sectarian violence in Iraq, where nearly 60 people were killed yesterday, and today another 24 people died across the country. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is pleading for unity. Five more GIs have been charged with the rape and murder of an Iraqi teenage girl and her family in Malmedia in March. These are in addition to former Army Private Stephen Green, who was charged earlier and is now in a Kentucky jail. A Pakistani passenger plane has crashed near the city of Multan, Pakistan, killing all 45 people aboard. And Russian investigators think faulty brakes may be to blame for yesterday's crash of an Airbus jet in the Siberian city of Irkutsk, where the plane ran off the runway, burst into flames when it hit a number of buildings. Up to 137 people were killed. 63 survived. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says Israel's offensive in Gaza will continue despite international criticism. He says their objective is to free an Israeli soldier kidnapped several weeks ago and that there is no time limit on their military operations. Three more Palestinians died today in Israeli airstrikes. Fighting continues in Mogadishu, Somalia, between Islamist militias and fighters loyal to the city's last warlords. The death toll in the past 2 days is over 60. U.S. and Afghan government forces killed more than 40 suspected Taliban in a ground and air assault in southern Afghanistan today. The Massachusetts Supreme Court has ruled that a proposed state constitutional amendment to ban future same-sex marriages in that state can be placed on the ballot. Fire crews still on the scene of a collapsed three-story apartment building in Manhattan's Upper East Side, where seven people were injured this morning. A gas explosion is believed to have been the cause. The Space Shuttle Discovery crew is in the middle of another spacewalk, their second of three, before they return home on Monday. The J. Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles has agreed to return two of four ancient Greek objects, which the Greek government claims were illegally taken from that country. One is a 2,400-year-old grave marker, the other an ancient votive relief. This is Quality News Network, and business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The United States has a new Treasury Secretary. Former Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson sworn in today at the White House. Panasonic plans to come out with the world's largest plasma TV by early next year. The 103-inch screen will weigh nearly 500 pounds. No price yet, but a slightly smaller version now sells for $7,500 in Japan. The European Commission says that if Microsoft continues to disregard a 2004 European antitrust ruling against the company, the daily fines may increase to $3.8 million. The U.S. and South Korea have begun a second round of talks on a free trade pact. Meetings are expected to continue all week. The new Pirates of the Caribbean film has made box office history, earning $132 million in its opening weekend. The old record was $114 million set by Spider-Man 4 years ago. Pirates also became the first film to earn over $100 million in just 2 days. California's fourth largest auto insurer plans to start basing its rates on how safely and how much its customers drive rather than where they live. The Auto Club of Southern California estimates that change will mean a savings of about $133 million a year for its 1 million policyholders. And the British food giant Tate & Lyle is making plans to convert corn into a fiber to make clothes. They're building a plant in Tennessee and expect to put the BioPDO in commercial production this fall. Light sweet crude oil trading at $73.10 a barrel, down 99 cents. The Dow is up 37, NASDAQ up 8, and the S&P 500 is up 3. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back. glad to have you all back with us after the news here at the, well, at the halfway point in the show, I guess it is. 2-hour program every day from 3 to 5 p.m. For all you newbies, that's 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Out on the West Coast, I guess it's noon to 2, right? Something like that anyway. And, well, Chicago, what, an hour different Chicago? Don't ask me about the 2-hour bit. I don't know. Maybe Salt Lake City. I'm not sure. Welcome, and awfully glad to have you along with us this afternoon. You know, I was just scanning some quick little news stories there during the... yeah, it's true. I wasn't listening to the news broadcast. I wasn't. I was looking for some other news. I see that our good friend Tucker Carlson is going to have his show on now from 4 to 6 every day Eastern Time on MSNBC instead of the late hour show that he did have, and it's going to be changed around. They must like Tucker Carlson over at MSNBC, as we all know him, Bowtie Boy. There's a deal that I have never been able to understand. I've never been able to understand Tucker Carlson. I can understand Limbaugh. I can understand O'Reilly and Hannity and most of the shows that are on. Well, I can't understand Rita Cosby either. But I've really failed to get Tucker Carlson. I don't know what it is about him that they see. He's like the Tony Danza of cable. He just won't go away. Have you ever noticed how many times Tony Danza's been on a program and come back? And I don't know how many shows he's been on TV, but many, many, many. I guess I've just never a big Tony Danza fan. He's probably a nice guy and all that, but never could understand that. I'm weird when it comes to showbiz. Did any of you go see that new big movie that was The Pirates that was out this weekend? I don't go to the movies. We'll rent one about 5-6 times a year. That's about the only time I ever get to watch them. And I never go to the theater anymore. I shouldn't say never. I was there once a couple years ago. Shows you how far out of touch I am with the showbiz. But the reason I brought this up, I'm going around in circles here. The reason I brought this up about Tucker Carlson is for the benefit of those of you who think the left is making any inroads whatsoever into the media world. Now, 4 to 6 p.m., MSNBC, wouldn't that be a good time to have somebody from the left on? Wouldn't it? But no, we get Tucker Carlson, which I won't watch. I guess he's on right now. So all of you that are listening to the program, you want to turn on your TV, watch Tucker Carlson, you may do so at this moment and see him for 1 hour. But what you want to do is turn it on, turn sound down, and listen to this program. I don't know what that would get you. But no, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. And once again, you know, you've heard me harp on this a thousand times. The left is getting left behind in the media. I mean, we've got some great people on our side in the media. We've got some great people. You know, my very favorite, I mean, I love Mike and Tom. I love both of them. I think they're just the best. They're just absolutely the best. I see somebody sent on the chat room who said that Tony Danza was eye candy for the ladies. Well, all right, I guess no wonder I didn't understand that then. I don't know what eye candy. I mean, I know what eye candy is, but I guess I don't see it in the guys, if you know what I mean. No, we're losing ground. We've got some great people. We've got some great people. Now you tell me. Any of you tell me. And I know I'm biased, but you tell me that Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman couldn't go on MSNBC and have a program every evening and be wildly well-received by people on the left. I know damn well they would. I know they would. I know it. But where are we at? There's nobody on the TV that I know of. There's nobody. Who? Nobody. Oh, well. I'll never understand that as long as I live. But, you know, just a lot of people think, well, you know, the left's coming right along in the media. No, we're not. We're not. You know, the guy that's listened to, and I'll just say it,
you know, the guy that is listened to the most, so-called from the left, is Big Eddie. And, you know, I got a fence post out here that's more of a Democrat than he is. Come on. We need some good people from the left in the media. And there's plenty out there. But they're not getting the chance. They're just not getting the chance. It sickens me that Tucker Carlson is taking the 4 and 6 o'clock slot there. MSNBC making no bones about heading right. None whatsoever. And the news, again, is getting so slanted. Did you notice over the weekend? Did you notice it? Hello? Anybody paying attention? Once again, we're seeing exactly what the Bush administration and the neocon Republicans think of the intellect of the average American. And, of course, I'm talking about the latest in scare tactics being exhibited by Junior Bush's people. First, we have the less than magnificent seven over in Miami, who were reported to be a huge, monstrous, absolutely verifiable threat to the security of the United States of America. Remember all those breathless reports, and you saw the pictures on TV, CNN and Fox, and all of them rushed over there, and they had the police tape around these guys' place. You know, they were absolutely breathless, the reports coming out of Miami, that these seven losers were about to blow up half the country. They were going to blow up the Sears Tower. That was their main target, along with several federal buildings in Miami. Man, oh man, I saw that report on TV with the reporters and the FBI officials staring into the camera and telling us all about how they'd saved us from certain annihilation from these terrorists. Damn, I breathed a sigh of relief when I heard that they'd been captured. I thought to myself, thank God George Bush is our president. Something like that. Will you ever forget those words? I will never forget those words. Biggest lie in the history of American politics. At the Republican convention, that Rudy Giuliani was getting up and speaking, he mentioned 9/11 how many times during his speech? But he's standing there with a straight face and says to this Republican audience and to a national TV audience, I turned to my chief of police, Bernard Kerik, and said, thank God George Bush is our president. Oh, boy. But, you know, as it turns out, these seven guys are nothing more than a bunch of losers who didn't even own shoes. I don't have the wherewithal to plan and finance and carry out the mission the FBI saved us from. Turns out they were just playing a modern-day game of cops and robbers, and because certainly no one could claim they had a chance in hell of achieving their mission. The whole thing was a big joke. But anyway, I did feel safe knowing that the FBI is right on top of these things now. Oh, yeah. So again, last week, we hear that another group of terrorists were going to blow up. Excuse me. They were going to blow up half of New York City. Oh, man. Here we go again. New York City. They're going to blow up some train tunnels and flood the whole, you know, the Wall Street and the whole area. You're going to it was awful. New York was going to be devastated, flooded. Oh, what's that? New York City's 10 feet above sea level and couldn't have been. Oh, well, anyway, I feel a whole lot safer now that they got those guys. And, you know, there's the story that came out about them. Why did we hear about this just last week? The ringleader of this horrible group, SM Hamoud, he'd been in captivity for 3 months. 3 months they had this guy. They knew about this all this time. Lebanese officials arrested him in April at the request of the FBI. Meanwhile, although the assistant director of the FBI insisted this plot was the real deal, CBS reported on it, said it was largely aspirational. The plot never went beyond emails. There was no credible link to Al-Qaeda, and there was no specific mention of the Holland Tunnel, just the mass transit system more generally. And some additional sources said no one in the United States ever took part in the internet conversations, and no one ever purchased any explosives or even scouted the transit system. And we got this, this former CIA spook, Philip Giraldi, who is no liberal, believe me. He frequently writes to the American Conservative magazine. Let me quote some things he said. I mean, remember, this is a conservative guy talking here about this horrible plot to blow up New York City. The so-called New York tunnel plot was a result of discussions held on an open jihadi website. They are not professionally trained terrorists, however, and had no resources with which to carry out the operation they discussed. Despite press reports that they had asked Zarqawi for assistance, there is no information to confirm that, and it's known that the members discussed the possibility of approaching Zarqawi, but none of them knew him or had any access to him. He goes on to say, in sum, the plot, if that is what we should call it, was not well conceived, and there was no possibility of flooding Wall Street. There was no connection to a cell in the U.S. Finally, professional terrorists generally do not discuss targeting on opening channels, and it was being monitored from the beginning of the opening discussion. There was little chance of anything concrete happening. This is from a right-wing expert on this. So why did they put this out last week? Why did they do this? You know, I want to know, what is it with all the secrecy stuff Junior Bush administration has been complaining about? Why did they tell us about either of these incidents, okay? You know, I want to hook this up together here. They were going to prosecute the New York Times, traitors, treason, all that sort of thing for giving away secrets. Why did the FBI give away secrets? They've been finding these so-called terrorist plots going on here. Why didn't they just shut up and not say anything so all the other hundreds and thousands they would have us believe of terrorist plots against this country could keep on going thinking that they're not being watched? Now that our government has let it out that we caught two of these horrible groups, why, these other guys are going to be going, oh, wait, whoa, man, we better watch it. We're being followed. They caught these two. Which is more serious? The New York Times putting out something in the newspaper that the whole damn world already knew about, that we were tracking the funds of terrorists? The whole world knew about this? Or coming out and bragging about the fabulous Miami 7 and this group in New York, and letting every real terrorist in the world know that, hey, you guys better watch it. We're watching your ass. Who gave away more secrets there? Let me ask you. Huh? You know the answer to that. You know, why tip off potential terrorists and let them know that we're all these threats? Why not keep all this quiet so the FBI can keep tailing these guys and not let other potential terrorists know that we're in Michael Chertoff's words, all over this? I mean, I could be wrong, but isn't spreading this all over the press the same as what the administration is accusing the New York Times of doing? Blowing covers? Isn't that the same thing? I certainly think so. Oh, I forgot. It's an election year. Ah. We're going to hear about one rescue from terrorist after another. Every other day we're going to hear something like this and how they've just saved us. The Bush administration, they've saved us. Thank God they've saved us. Thank God George Bush is our president. It's going to seem like Junior Bush himself is personally protecting us. We'll be on alert from now to November, but not to worry. Not to worry. The Republicans will save us. Just you wait and see. Why, if it hadn't been for George Bush, we'd have been hit 3 or 4 dozen times by now. There wouldn't be any buildings left in America. But if we do get hit again, if we do, you know whose fault it'll be. Ah, yes, it'll be the fault of those damn Democrats for not being tough enough on terror, right? You see, those damn Democrats really don't give a hoot whether we're safe or not. They're a bunch of cowards who want to let terrorists just run wild in the streets. That will be the story when we get hit again, and we will get hit again some of these days. Pray to God we don't. But the odds are some of these nutcases will get through someday, and when it happens, you wait and see where the blame goes. It's going straight to the Democrats, let me tell you. Because George has thwarted every other attempt to get us. Well, except for that little 9/11 deal. I mean, you know, that. What was it he said to the guy that came in and briefed him when he wanted to go out and fish and clear brush in the ranch? He didn't have time for the CIA report. He told the guy, okay, you've covered your ass. That's what he told the CIA guy. That's how much attention he gave that thing. Tells the CIA guy that tells him that they might use planes to blow up buildings and stuff. Well, you covered your ass, and then he went fishing and cleared brush. What is it with this guy clearing brush? I don't know. I was out there in this place. There is a lot of brush. Oh, ugly place there where he lives. Nothing but brush. And don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on that. I'm not a big lover of that particular area of the country. I was thinking today when that was brought to mind that Dick Cheney was visiting in Michigan. I guess someone let me know here on a chat room that that Dick Cheney was in Detroit, giving a speech in Detroit. That's what he was doing in Michigan today. Lucky Detroit. I'm sure all of you remember Jonathan Alder being on the program a couple of weeks ago talking about his new book. And I got to admit, he said something on this program that shocked me. I like to think I know my history fairly well. And he told me something I'd never heard. And I don't know how I avoided this. And I've read the book since, but the rest of it, he stated that during Roosevelt's first term, it was suggested that we adopt something like fascism to get America back on track. That it actually had been discussed. Thankfully for all of us, Roosevelt didn't think it was a very good idea for America. But there were some very influential men arguing for the dictatorship. Guys like Lowell Thomas and Walter Lippmann and William Randolph Hearst. But Roosevelt said no. How many of you, my listeners here, know who Lowell Thomas is? When I was a kid and you went to the movies, they always had this movie reel that they played, and Lowell Thomas was, and he did some news shows on TV as well. It was toward the end of his career, certainly. I'm not that dated, but I didn't know till just recently. I'm off on an aside here again that Lowell Thomas was responsible for making Lawrence of Arabia famous. He was doing some kind of a news report from France or something right after or during the First World War, and he wasn't having any luck with it, so he went over and he heard about Lawrence of Arabia, and it was Lowell Thomas that did that. Yeah. Well, there you have, more useless information. But, I don't want to defend everything Roosevelt did, and we're talking about this Jonathan Alder book. Don't forget that he didn't have it all right. Roosevelt didn't. Don't forget that thousands of innocent Japanese American citizens were interned in what today we'd call light security prisons. There's nothing else you could call them. That was wrong. And I'm really surprised that, and I've thought about this, I'm surprised that today's neocons aren't suggesting that we do the same thing with all the Muslims and Arab Americans. Just, round them up and put them in internment camps. Maybe they are calling for that, and I just haven't heard about it. But I think it's abundantly clear that the Bush administration, led by Vice President Cheney, and I think it's good that he's got Vice in his title, Vice President Cheney is trying to achieve that slide into a military dictatorship that failed back in the 1930s. It's mostly been Cheney who has argued that during, quote, a time of war, the president can do anything, he pleases in the name of national security. He can make his own laws, totally ignore Congress, use the Constitution and the Bill of Rights for scrap paper if he wants to. He doesn't need to get the advice and consent of Congress, the courts, or anyone else except for his puppet master, Cheney. I don't think they even feel the need to consult Alberto Gonzalez to find out about the legalities of their actions. He probably finds out later. It's probably one of those, oh, by the way, things. But not to worry, because the American public obviously isn't interested in such matters as preserving the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That's just old history stuff anyway. And never forget that Bush is a godly man, and we can trust him with almost unlimited powers for as long as it takes to win the war on terror. We can trust him. Right? You trust him, don't you? Yeah, sure. I'm not all sure. We had this big celebration about the Hamden Supreme Court ruling. And people on the left were saying, Yahoo, we've had a big setback for George Bush here and his drive to collect all the power of Washington in the White House. I'm not sure that the recent Hamdi Supreme Court case will stop Cheney and Bush from carrying out their plan of gaining and using supreme power over the judicial and the legislative branches of government. I'm not sure of that. He's already let it be known. He's hinted that he's simply going to go back to his rubber stamp Congress and have him pass legislation that gives him any power he wants anyway. You know, it's going to be here's mud in your eye for the Supreme Court. You wait and see. And don't forget, these are people that some of them that he appointed. And they still thought he was wrong. Well, none of the people he appointed. But it is. It's gonna be here's mud in your eye to the Supreme Court. The Republican congressmen seeking re-election are already saying that they're going to defy the Supreme Court because their ruling was soft on terror, just like most of the Democrats. That's what they're saying. In my humble opinion, I believe Dick Cheney is the most evil, vile, disgusting man to ever hold office in America. And you can quote me, and I hope you do. He's more anti-American than Alger Hiss. He's a danger to the Constitution of the United States, and thus he's a danger to our democracy. Long before 9/11, Dick Cheney bragged that the Bush administration had mounted an effort led by him to consolidate the government power back in the White House where it belonged, in his words. He's fulfilled his promise, and by doing so, he's endangered the people of these United States. And you make no mistake about it, Dick Cheney left to do his will definitely turn this country into a dictatorship with him pulling the strings from behind the scenes. That's how he sees his role, and that's what he will achieve if the Congress and the people don't wake up pretty doggone soon. Have no illusions about what Dick Cheney has in store for this country if he had his way. Have no illusions whatsoever. He is a vile, evil man with horrible intentions for the democracy of the United States of America. How the hell did we ever end up with a man like that in the office of the vice presidency? Well, I know how. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I'm sorry I missed most of the first half, so I'm not sure what you've been talking about. But there's about three little things I'd like to talk about, if you don't mind.
All right.
You were talking about bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when Phil Donahue was on MSNBC and his program just got better and better?
Sure.
And all of a sudden he was off, and I remember writing a letter to them to protest it. And I got back this email saying, well, they regretted that they had to let it go because of poor ratings.
Uh-huh.
And I kept sending it, and I kept getting it. It was a form letter.
Sure.
And I've kept a copy of it.
Oh, my.
But anyway, his was the highest rated show on there. You know.
Yeah, it was at the time. You're absolutely right.
Uh-huh. They just didn't want what he was saying. And, of course, it was getting close to the war, you know, and he was against the war, but his program was just got better and better, I thought. But, and then another thing is, did you see, have you talked about this, on C-SPAN, they had Katrina, what was her name, her last name?
Katrina VandenHeuvel.
Okay, her, and they had Lanny Davis talking about Lieberman.
Yeah,
I had to watch a
video of it, yeah.
Isn't that disgusting?
Yeah.
And, you know, Lanny Davis, I used to kind of admire him, but, you know, I watched him so much on Fox and all like that. To me, he's just disgusting.
Well, with Lanny Davis, you always remember the old saying, follow the money.
And, you know, he was like a roommate or something, or a classmate of George's.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, the reason I remember is because when they were running, he said, oh, well, if we get to him, you know, he's a good guy, I know him, you know, we'll be fine.
Oh, well, it's worked out real well so far.
Yeah, and the other thing was the first time I heard the resident say that about the funerals, that if he went to one, he'd have to go to all of them, mm-hmm. something like that. was on Larry King's show, but I've seen it where he's saying that now on other places. And how did he decide that there were going to be so many that he couldn't go to any of them? I mean, what was the first one that he decided?
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be too many now. I can't go. Or couldn't somebody have called or somebody have gone in his place?
That's a good point. I think they get a form letter, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dear loved ones, sorry your kid's dead.
Yeah. And I just, I'm like you about the all the different terror things now. I mean, he acted like he was surprised that reporters were asking him so many questions about North Korea.
Yeah.
And my gosh, why wouldn't they?
Oh, did you see that shameful press conference he had the other day?
Yeah,
how he just sat there and smirked at everybody? I mean, you know, that... I wish one reporter had the nerve to stand up and say, why do you have that stupid smirk on your face? Like, you know, I just wish one would... I mean, I know that'd be the last... He'd have to give up his press credentials, but...
Boy. Oh, yeah. But it'd be worth it, wouldn't it, I think.
Yes. You know, and somebody responded to your question why didn't he go to funerals or the first funeral. Anyway, someone on the chat room wrote in and said the first funeral would have been for the truth. And, of course, there's that old saying that the truth is always the first casualty of war. And And again, it was in this case. So, yeah, well put. Thanks for your call, Juanita.
It's really tragic.
Yep, it is. It is.
Okey-doke.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
WithEstateRadio.com.
This is Tim Robbins. Recently in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans in high levels of government, the military, and intelligence have risked their careers, their livelihoods, and in some cases their safety to bring information to light to expose the lies, duplicity, and potential crimes of the Bush administration. These patriotic Americans are trying to tell us something. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635, for an official investigation into the Bush administration.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
Hi, yes, welcome back to the Guy James Show. You can give us a call, you know, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We hope you will join us. Love to hear your opinion on things. I'm not the only one who's got an opinion, you know. And it's not just me hearing your opinion. All the other folks around here would like to hear your opinion as well. So give us a call, 866-546-5254. I will not, as Mr. Limbaugh says, I'm not the all-power dictator here, the only one that whose opinion matters. No, your opinion matters, and we love to hear them. We do. Well, we've got some, 23 minutes left in the program here. You've got plenty of time. 866-546-5254. Read an interesting article about Al Gore keeping his options open for a 2008 presidential run. And, you know, once in a while you read something and think, geez, I should have written that because it's exactly what I was thinking. And in this article definitely was. I was thinking when Al brought out his movie, that perfect way to start off a political campaign with an extremely important movie. And it doesn't hurt the fact that it's a great movie. But Al was at a book signing thing when a fan pushed a copy of his new book at him for his autograph. And inside the cover, she wrote, "Plan to run for president in 2008? With boxes marked yes or no." And Al Gore paused and then scribbled one word, quote, "plans," next to the no box and checked it. No plans, but not a firm no. Well, we've seen this game before. The McClatchy newspapers, I guess in California, wrote this article, and it's a good one. His artfully qualified answer underscored the fact that despite his protest, Gore refuses to rule out another run for president. He's keeping his options open. If he's running, he's doing all the right things, says Brian Melendez, the chairman of the State Democratic Farmer Labor Party in Minnesota. He tried in the traditional way the last time, and look what it got him. This time, he's a passionate man indulging his passion. And if it happens to take off for him in the next year, he would be very well positioned. I agree with Brian Melendez on that. His crusade to curb global warming by staging an award-winning movie and writing a best-selling book is pushing him back into the spotlight and into the hearts of rank-and-file Democrats in ways that more conventional politicians can only envy. In the process, he's invented a deceptively clever path back into presidential politics, should he decide to take it. While it's not a traditional campaign, it's the most brilliant campaign anyone is running right now, said Martin Perez, a longtime Gore friend and the editor-in-chief of the New Republic, a neoliberal magazine. I don't know if I'd call that a neoliberal magazine. Perez says that it may be the most brilliant campaign launch of our time. At the recent book signing in Beverly Hills, hundreds of people waited for as long as 4 hours to see Al Gore in a line that stretched more than a block. And when he first walked in, tieless and clad entirely in black like some latter-day Johnny Cash, he was greeted by chants of, "Oh, wait, oh, wait, oh, wait." And there was people there yelling things at him. "You're president in our hearts," said Julia Winbrandt, an administrative assistant from L.A. To those urging him to run, Gore repeated again and again that he had no plans to run, but he never ruled it out. "He says he has no plans, but plans change," said Angela Cortez, a sales director of a matchmaking service. This is a perfect platform for him. Indeed, the man who won the popular vote in 2000 but lost the presidency to George W. Bush has endeared himself anew to many Democrats. And, you know, I hear that everywhere I go.
I'm hearing that more and more and more. And, you know, in the aftermath of the 2000 election, and when Al gave that impassioned speech and conceded, damn, that makes me sad to even think about that. But after the long battle, and which I think he gave up too soon, and I think he now knows he gave up too soon, but again, he did it so that the country wouldn't have an open, festering wound. Man, that was hard to watch. But I think a lot of people at that time, you know, were really mad at Al Gore for doing that. But I do think he's moved his way back into a lot of people's hearts, and I'm hearing it more and more and more every single day. From I go visit with Democratic clubs and so forth, and Democratic gatherings. They're talking about Al Gore. And I know some of you listening to the program probably, you know, are at Democratic Club meetings and events, and you're hearing it as well. But I mean, I'm hearing it a lot, and I'm happy that I'm hearing it a lot. I really am. I love Al Gore. I think Al Gore's a great man. I think he's a man who will leave a good legacy when he leaves this earth. He's a good man, and I mean good man, good to the depths of his soul. He is a good man. And I don't think we can say that about many of these people in this administration today. There's been a lot of bad people in Washington, D.C., and we've got some of them in there right now. But I would love to see what Al Gore, and you know you've heard that over and over and over again. Well, it's a good thing Al Gore wasn't in there when 9/11 happened. And you mean what by that? What could you mean by that? Oh, maybe we wouldn't have attacked Iraq. Maybe we would have made a concerted effort to find bin Laden. Maybe we would have made a concerted effort to go around the world with special units and so forth and ferret out actual terrorists instead of taking a huge army into Afghanistan, a huge army into Iraq. We might have done it the right way. Is that what you mean? When you say, oh, it's a good thing Al Gore wasn't president, is that what you mean? Let me ask you, you know, the people on the right, and I wish some of you cowards would have the nerve to call into the program. You send this email, and you don't ever have the cojones to back it up. But we've asked the question quite a few times on this program over the last 4 years. What has George Bush done that's working? What? For average Joe American, forget it. We know what he's done. We know what he's done for the people that run Wall Street and the fat cats that live on Gulf Drive down in Naples, Florida, and Beverly Hills. We know what he's done for those people. That's that's crystal clear what he's done for those people. We know that. Tell me what he's done for average Joe American working on the assembly line at General Motors or down at Whirlpool or any of those companies. Tell me what he's done. Are you safer? Hell no, you're not safer. Has your money gone farther, or are you working harder for less money? Less spending power to your money. What has George Bush done that has benefited the United States of America? Did he bring dignity back to the White House that you people were trumpeting so much when he was running for office? Oh, he'll bring dignity back to the White House. Has he done that? Did you see that disgusting interview? I only watched about 3 minutes of it. With Larry King? Oh. And what is it with Laura? Now, some of you are going to be mad at me for what I'm about to say, but as you know, if it's on my mind, I'm going to say it, and I'm going to say it. But it went through my mind when I saw, I did. I saw about 3 minutes of that. It went to commercial. I thought, that's enough of that. I can't watch anymore. Did you see the expression on Laura Bush's face as she was sitting there gazing adoringly at her husband when he was answering some of Larry King's question? First of all, it might have run across your mind, Stepford wife. Secondly, it ran across my mind, and my God, she looks like Jack Nicholson as the Joker in that Batman movie. And you're going to hate me for that one. And thirdly,
I looked at her. And I said, is she on drugs or something? Look at the look on her face. Did you see that? Woo. It was weird looking. Very weird looking. That's not very dignified of me to say that, is it? But, hey, it's, I promise to always let you know what I'm thinking. That's it. That's what I was thinking when I saw that. Hey, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? You're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Well, that person's not real talkative, I guess. Maybe it was a wrong number. yeah, these eats, they were calling in to order a pizza or something. No, the pizza places, they don't have toll-free numbers. They're calling in to order a... Oh, something strange. Who knows? But I am happy that Al Gore's running again. We were talking, chatting about that a moment ago, and I got off on that that weird interview of Larry King. First of all, I'm not a big Larry King fan. First of all, if you're a big hotshot and you want to go get plenty of FaceTime and improve your image, go on the Larry King show because he'll throw you as many softballs as you can handle. Just one nice little softball. Well, Mr. President. You know, what did you think about this? And what did you think? You know, aren't any of these people ever going to have the temerity to stand there and say, "Hey, the hell's the matter with you? Getting these people killed over in Iraq? What's wrong with you? Why are you putting up with these murders that are taking place over there and by our troops and so forth? Why don't you getting rid of some of the generals and colonels and majors and all the way down the line that have put up with this kind of crap and not done anything about it and covered it up. Why aren't you going to do something about that? Why not ask him a few questions like that? So what if it's the last time he ever appeared on your show? So what? So what if you're Larry King? And he's what? I don't know, 80, 70? I don't know how old Larry King is. How many more years do you want to do this? So what if he get fired by being... A little bit rude to the President of the United States. So what? I'd do it. Oh, I'd do it. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. This is Terry up in Fort Myers. How you doing?
Hi, Terry.
You were talking about, you know, Al Gore and some people talking about, you were asking the question, you know, what would have happened or, you know, pertaining to 9/11. I'm going to tell you something right now. And I don't have all the facts to back it up. I can't prove it positively. Okay, there are a lot of circumstantial evidence that makes any reasonable person question everything. I'm personally not sure that 9/11 would have happened if Gore would have been in office.
Well, yeah, how can you be? That's right.
Because now first of all, now think about this. If I come down there and blow up your building, or whatever it may be, all right, say I got a plane or something that I run into your building, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing that's going to happen? There's going to be a criminal investigation. They're going to rope that place off. There is nobody going to be able to touch anything ever. And, I mean, they're going to be there for months sifting through things. Why did they go into where... the Twin Towers were and immediately start removing everything and disposing of it? Inquiring minds really want to know.
Yeah, a lot of people want to know.
I mean, that sounds like something's not quite right. If that was, which it obviously is, a criminal act, then a criminal investigation should have been done. Why did the administration immediately move in and clearing up to where there was no possibility for that to happen?
Well, absolutely.
Thing is just questions. I got a lot of questions and haven't got any answers.
Well, and why did Bush peer around the corner at a White House meeting the next day? It said that his own Treasury Secretary said he peered around the corner at the meeting in the White House the next day and said something about we're going to hit Iraq. There's all sorts of things like that, anecdotes about him and Cheney, especially Cheney, right away started asking for all the information, and Rumsfeld started going after Iraq immediately.
Tell you what, if you want to read a really good book, and they can't say it's written by a left-wing nut, because it's written by Paul O'Neill, who's as credible as any conservative can possibly be, with massive amounts of experience in Washington, massive amounts of experience in business, His track record is absolutely impeccable. I disagree with a lot of his politics, if you will, but he wrote a book. It's called The Price of Loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get that book and read it.
I have read it.
Or have you?
And what did they do to him when he left office?
they tried to slam him when he put out that book, and they were I found this really, really interesting. What they actually did was he came out the first day and he was saying all that stuff because he hit the talk shows while I'm watching that, you know, I'm watching these interviews. Well, that afternoon, the White House attacked him, stating that there was going to be an investigation and this and that for him stealing documents from the Treasury Department and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the very next morning, all of these talk show hosts, they asked him about what the White House had just said. O'Neill was very cool, calm, collected, and he knows his stuff. He said, well, if they had have done their investigation prior to opening their mouth, they would have realized that 30 days pursuant to the law, 30 days after I left office, I made a written request to the Department of Treasury asking them for every document that I was able to have as a private citizen now that had come across my desk while I was there, and those documents are the documents that I have are what the Treasury Department sent me. I took nothing with me. You
yeah.
never heard another word out of the Bush administration over that.
No, it quit. It stopped real quick. It stopped real quick.
That very next day when he made those statements, probably on about three or four shows, there was not another word. What they did is shut up and go to something else and hope he just disappears.
Yeah, I agree. They did. That he shut him down real quick, And I was proud of him for doing that. That's probably the only thing politically I ever agreed with him on, but he did. He put it to him in short order.
In that book, okay, there's documents in the back of the book that are photostat copies of the documents that he's referencing through the book, which prove his point unequivocally, irrebuttably. That's why they just did not, they did not attack any of the information. Did you ever notice that?
No, they couldn't.
They couldn't. You got it, Bubba.
They couldn't. I mean, they never attacked the, it's just like the Dan Rather thing. They didn't attack the story. They attacked Dan Rather.
Right.
They couldn't attack the story.
That's absolutely correct.
They always do. You know, kill the messenger. That's exactly what they do right off the bat every single time. And they're good at it. Let's give them credit. They're really good at it.
However, what happens is most people get defensive. Okay, and then they start trying to defend their character.
Yeah.
What they need to do is to ignore that attack and respond by bringing everything back to the question at hand and never get off focus. Because when you do that, they have an issue. It's always their issue. Never assume the liability of the issue yourself because they're the ones that got the issue. They're the ones that need to answer it.
that's an excellent point.
The question is, I don't care where you go off, I don't care what you say about me or my mom or anybody else, here's the question at hand. And just keep putting it out there over and over and over and over and over, and they have to eventually do something about it. Or, well, we can't respond because that's pursuant to national security.
Yeah.
That's going to be their typical standard response.
It has been. It has been all along.
When they get pushed into the corner, that's national security.
Right. Right. Or it's an ongoing investigation, and we can't comment on that. I love that one too.
Same damn thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely is.
Anyway, I'm gonna let you get, guy. You got a great show. Keep going.
Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate
it. Talk to you later, buddy.
Bye. I had a note around here somewhere. I'm very unorganized. I can tell it's Monday. I don't know why I'm always unorganized on Monday. It's not the beginning of the week for me. It's the first show of the week, but I've usually been working all weekend. And anyway, I had some notes how the administration spent $1 million. I'm looking here. What did I do with that? They spent $1 million with this small university. I think it was down in Texas to find out ways that they could prohibit the public from, just stifling more information. How to keep more information away from the Republic, the public legally through the Freedom of Information Act and so forth. That's what they're after. That's the gist of it. They just they just want to keep everything they possibly can from the public. And they're they're real doggone good at that. I mean, they really are. And it's getting worse. And, of course, we have this Hoekstra. Where is he, from Michigan? Representative Hoekstra from Michigan, Republican, complaining over the weekend that Bush has been keeping the spying from Congress, and he's not talking about the ones that's already been revealed. He's not talking about that at all. He sent out a copy of a 4-page letter dated May the 18th that was obtained by the New York Times. How do they do this? It's got, well, you know how they do it. There's somebody in the administration, or not actually in the administration, but some bureaucrats. You know, these lifelong bureaucrats, career bureaucrats, when you know, they're working in an office, and they're not really political. They're just working there, and administrations change. They don't like some of the changes, and they don't like some of the new bosses they get. So they're, you know, maybe apt to let a little something slip now and then. Yeah, just a couple of little things just happened to slip. Gee whiz, where's the time go today? It really did go fast. Somebody asked me about this, and I told him I'd bring up these stats the other day. I've got a couple of minutes left in the program, so I'll do that right now. The subject was, how big is Walmart? And listen to some of these figures. Don't know whether this is good or bad. 90% of Americans live within, I think it's bad, 90% of Americans live within 15 miles of a Walmart. Imagine that, 90%. At Walmarts, Americans spend $36 million every hour of every day. Now, that's not at your local Walmart. That's all the Walmart. $36 million an hour they take in. This works out to $20,928 of profit every minute. Whew. Walmart will sell more by St. Patrick's Day than Target sells all year long. Walmart is bigger than Home Depot, Kroger, Target, Sears, Costco, and Kmart combined. Walmart employs 1.6 million people and is the largest private employer. Walmart is the largest company in the history of the world. Walmart now sells more food than Kroger and Safeway combined, and they did this in only 15 years. During this same period, 31 supermarket chains sought bankruptcy, including Winn-Dixie, which is right down the road here. Walmart now sells more food than any other store in the world. Walmart has 3,900 stores in the United States, of which 1,906 are supercenters. This is 1,000 more than they had 5 years ago. And this year, 7.2 billion different purchasing experiences will occur at Walmart store. That's more than one purchase for every person on the earth. Imagine that. I'm not a Walmart fan. Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the program today. Always a pleasure to have all of you along with us. And we hope you'll remember that it is a listener-supported program. You can donate to the program at our website on PayPal, and we also got our snail mail address there, too. And we appreciate each and every one of you who donate to the program, and each and one of you, every one of you who listen to the program as well. We're doing what we can, folks, to try and keep America's head above water. Thanks so much to everybody for listening. And as always, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good day.